Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is a Force Center podcast feed, and this is Force Center, the big show, the main show, the Super Star Destroyer of our fleet. I'm Ken Napzok, that's Joseph Scrimshaw.
Yeah.
And that's Jennifer Landa.
Hell yeah.
thank you. And here's the Kool-Aid man. Oh yeah.
We are crashing into your Star Wars week with our Star Wars week. It's going to be a fun deal. Look, we always like catching up Life Avengers. We will here in a second. We've all just, life's been busy, and that's not a bad thing. It's not always a good thing, but we're here home again, Joseph.
Yes.
Star Wars.
Yes, happy to be home in your home, Ken.
In my home, and Jennifer's here as well. Before you, let's get the business out of the way. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And we got our Force Center recommends coming on a little bit later in the show. And if you want to support us directly, this is a great way to do it. So, all right. Yeah, came skidding into the landing zone here today.
Yeah,
I finished Resistance 2 minutes before you got here.
Nice,
Joseph.
Oh. It's a good episode.
It was a really good episode.
Yeah,
the disappeared.
Yeah, people disappeared.
Oh,
I watched it late at night.
Yeah.
with some whiskey and some frozen pizza.
I mean, that's on brand if I've ever heard the term on brand. Good stuff. And that's like the only Star Wars adventure I had this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's it.
That's
okay.
It. That's it. Bye, everybody.
Bye. The rest of it disappeared. Yeah. I had a lot of adventures. I had too many adventures this week.
Yeah. A lot going on.
Two shows, friends in town, got sick in the middle of the week, mom's birthday, in-laws in town. Yeah. The pitch meeting. Yeah.
Is, wow.
Yeah, I can't remember all the things happened to me. I'm going to try to be awake and fun grumpy like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Okay.
That's a good way to look
Instead
at it.
Instead of cranky grumpy.
Someone
said bad things to me about Star Wars, and it was not in a context in which I could say things back. So I'm carrying all of that with me.
It's so weird how that can affect us as we try to be positive Star Wars fans and are positive Star Wars fans, which doesn't mean we don't see little places to have fun conversations about things that are not as good or different or anything or taken different. We get that.
Yeah.
But when you have to swallow that emotional grenade.
Yeah, obviously, like with Star Wars counseling, like, and there's been plenty of times I've talked about where, like, I've been at, like, Hollywood meetings and people have been, do you like Star Wars? I'm like, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. What do you think? And then I will listen and I will ask questions. I don't mind hearing bad opinions.
Yeah.
It's just when somebody drives by and goes like, by the way, all of the new movies are terrible. Anyway, and that you're in a context where you can't engage in any way. You can't even say, well, I personally disagree and think they're very valuable and mean a lot to a lot of people. Like,
I was at a pre-Oscar event. I find myself at every year with Grace, and I'm just in the corner, you know, not knowing anybody and having fun observing. And then two people I knew, one from the Schmodown, Meredith Irwin, her husband Ethan Irwin was the Schmodown champion, and he's a producer for Silver Pictures. She comes over, hey, and it's like, oh, a familiar face. And so we started talking about Star Wars, and she had a friend I hadn't met, a female friend of hers, a director, I should say, and they both, Star Wars came up, and there was a pause, and they both looked at me, and they went, well, are you going to be nice about Last Jedi? And I went, well, yeah, it's like my second favorite Star Wars film. They both went, okay, cool.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, it's like, we have this. It's like a knock on a door at a bar in the back. So that was part of my, but hey, you're here. You're in the hut.
Yeah, I'm alive.
Fun Obi-Wan grumpy.
Ready to be fun grumpy.
Jennifer, are you grumpy?
No, actually, I feel great. I got to watch the Academy Awards last night.
Yeah.
First time in 3 years. That was exciting. I did have a mini Star Wars adventure, only by happenstance. We were at 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica, and there's this place called Puzzle Zoo.
Ooh.
And I've always loved, they always have a great Star Wars collection, a lot of vintage action figures and things like that. Their selection has dwindled.
That's good. People are buying.
Yeah, but it was still there. I was very excited after all these years. And my daughter was like looking at something. I'm like, oh, wait. Oh, mama's going to look at this.
Yeah.
And people, I'm sure, thought I was nuts because I'm oohing and eyeing. I saw, you know, Mon Mothma action figure,
ooh,
Captain Tarples, like a big,
big,
I don't know what it, action figure. Not really. It's like huge.
A 12 inch?
A 12 inch type of?
12 inch Tarples?
Yeah.
Wow.
In Phantom Menace packaging?
I think so. I took a video of it. And then, what else? Shadows of the Empire figures.
Nice. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
wow. That's
then
old school.
I started to lose my daughter. I was like, where is she? Where'd she go?
Where is she?
Josh, my husband. Yeah. So, yeah. He's like, what were you doing over there? I'm like, I don't know, looking.
Look at Star Wars toys.
Looking.
Did you buy anything?
No, because I didn't have enough time to really, like, okay, what do I need in my collection?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally understand. Yeah.
That's the tough thing is, what do you really need to add?
Right.
I was at, my favorite toy store, Andrew Joseph's Target, the other day.
Yeah, it's great.
And I had that Yeager Resistance figure in my hand, and I was like, I just got no room right now.
Yeah. I did it.
You did it?
Because when I mentioned that there is a two-pack with Bucket, my wife was like, ooh, Bucket. So I was like, all right, this isn't for me, it's for my wife.
Yeah, there you go. That's perfect.
There you go.
And as far as Resistance, I really did love it. The show's, we're coming down to, the last couple episodes here?
Mm-hmm.
This connection, the reference to Taco Donna.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was really cool, as one of the fans tweeted us, we've been so anxious to use some of these fun side characters, background characters in Resistance in Databank Brawl. It was fun to see some of them actually fight. Aunt Z fought and then Greville, this little Alenia.
Yeah.
Alenian alien who's mostly been background. Yeah. It's we got to hear the voice and lots of attitude. So fun.
Aunt Z, I think is how she prefers it. I mean, it was like a data bank move, like a jump and a squish of stormtroopers.
Yeah, she slammed them. That was WWE, right, Ken?
Absolutely was. Absolutely was. I could get behind her as a champion. So Star Wars Resistance rolls on, and as the season wraps up, we'll spend more and more time with it and looking back at the first season of Resistance. But let's dive into some news. We got some tasty tidbits, like a snack shop at Galaxy's Edge.
Mm-hmm, sounds delicious. Well, this year is the 20th anniversary of The Phantom Menace, and to celebrate this momentous occasion, there will be a 20th anniversary panel on Monday, April 15th at Star Wars Celebration. Now, they haven't announced who the special guests will be, so could we see Hayden Christensen, George Lucas, Samuel Jackson, Natalie Portman? We'll have to wait and find out. A lot of people online were upset that this panel is on Monday, the day that a lot of people are leaving. I did see that this is Monday's the only day that still has tickets available.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that. But why do you guys think that this was scheduled on this day? And who do you think might appear?
I don't know about the Monday stuff, but I do think that is a bummer.
Yeah, right?
What I react to in that is that they really want this to be about looking ahead and have all the stuff that they want to celebrate coming in 2019, especially we got that whole Triple Force Friday news confirming that they're committed to that Jedi Fallen Order video game coming out, that The Mandalorian is coming out. So I think it just means they really want to front load the future and Monday back burner the past.
Front load
which
the
is,
future.
A bummer to me because it does feel like let's lean into celebrating this.
As of right now, I don't know if I will be there Monday.
I think there is like 0.001% chance I'll still be there on Monday.
Because, I mean, we always, with the 5-day convention, and I still think, I haven't heard the reason, I don't know at all, but scheduling with the venue, something, the
scheduling
reason.
Scheduling with a big guest, yeah, maybe it is that they're trying to get the significant portion of the cast together.
Yeah, yeah, could be, and why this thing didn't start on Wednesday, I don't know, but it is a little bit of a bummer, but hey, the fact that they're doing it, and maybe we can all watch it, have a mini couch con.
Yeah.
And who will show up will be, I mean, I hope Ahmed Best gets the standing ovation he deserves.
Yeah, yes. I hope it's Ahmed Best and Rick McCallum alone together.
Dude, this could be cool.
Oh my gosh.
I don't think Jake Lloyd. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. Hayden would be great. I mean, since he's already made an appearance, Natalie Portman would obviously be amazing because of her stature.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I would be on the fence about whether or not she would actually come.
Yeah.
Recently, but man, she's been coming around to talking about Star Wars a little bit more often. I've been noticing. Yeah.
If she, like Ewan had that great quote a little while ago, where he was talking about hearing from more fans who grew up with it. So if she is starting to hear, you know, it's more in her rearview mirror, and she's starting to hear more from young women of like, no, she's my hero. She meant a lot to me. I grew up with her. Maybe that will make her more excited about talking about it.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that'd be true. Yeah. It might just be Ewan McGregor on stage.
No, I'm not doing it.
No, I'm not doing a series.
Movie.
I am maybe
aware
doing a series.
There's a rumor, says Ewan McGregor.
Oh my gosh. Well, some special guests that we do know who will be appearing at Star Wars Celebration in Chicago these were new announcements in case you guys, they just keep on coming. There is the OG Lando Calrissian, Billy Dee Williams, Alan Tudyk, Alan Tudyk, who played K2SO, obviously, Taylor Gray, and also Freddie Prinze Jr., who will reunite as Kanan and Ezra together in the Topps autograph area. There's one person that I did not mention, but I thought of you, Ken. Are you going to try and sneak a peek at Julian Glover, who is also making an appearance? For those of you who don't know, Glover played General Veers in The Empire Strikes Back and Master Pycelle in Game of Thrones.
And Walter Donovan in The Last Crusade. That's a trifecta of nerd right there.
Right.
Yeah, I will. If they're on the floor, I haven't ever paid for an autograph or anything. I usually am doing something, but I will always do the sneak by.
Yeah.
Just so I can see Julian Glover fiercely signing 8x10s.
I got to see him at Gallifrey 1, the Doctor Who convention, because he's Doctor Who is also in his amazing quiver of science fiction genre appearances. Yeah.
Wow, that's he's been across it all.
Yeah,
he's get him in Star
all.
Trek.
He's seen it all.
He's seen it all.
Yeah, but more guests. I'm sure we'll get more guests this week that'll be announced. Yeah. It's just star studded, I should say.
And I love the ability he's got to, you know, front and center. We'll see if he gets a little more time than he'd had in the 40th, and I imagine he will.
Oh yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I bet he'll have a one-on-one.
A one-on-one would be great.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah. Okay. Alan Horn, the chairman of Walt Disney Studios, gave a fascinating interview with a Hollywood Reporter last week. In the piece, he shared that it was Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm who approached Disney with the idea for the Mandalorian series for the upcoming Disney Plus platform. Horn said that he also visited the Episode 9 set and that the film is going to be terrific. But any movie after 9 is still in discussion. Lastly, he talked about managing expectations when Disney has such a packed slate of tentpole films like Lion King, Frozen 2, and of course Episode 9. And he said that when you make big movies like Disney does, they get a lot of attention, whether it's positive or negative, quote, so when they don't work, like Solo, the media says it's a failure. I think it was a pretty good movie. Didn't resonate as much as we'd hoped it would, but the press writes it up in a more negative way than I would, end quote. Okay, I thought that was an interesting choice of words. Would you guys say that Solo didn't work?
I think he's talking financially.
That's what I was thinking, too. Because I'm like, I loved it. I know a lot of people who enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to read an interview with a high-powered person like this who is doing the business stuff, but then is spending most of his time, as he says in the interview, giving creative notes.
Yes.
In his speech, and what he is saying wanders indiscriminately back and forth between what is clearly a business perspective to a creative perspective.
Right.
Like, I feel like that phrasing of, I didn't bring them the Mandalorian, they brought me the Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's talking about, like, well, maybe I would have written up three ideas. Like, you know, what if Jar Jar Binks? Like, what in here, take that.
Yeah.
That's kind of a creative thing. But then Solo, I feel like he's saying financial.
Right. Yeah, that's good clarification.
It's pretty honest from him. I don't know. I mean, I'm on the set of Episode 9. And it's going to be terrific because, you know, what else is he going to say? But for him to acknowledge in some way that, it wasn't as bad as people said. And I don't know. I don't hear that kind of stuff often from the big wigs. Maybe I don't know. But I don't hear a lot from Alan Horn. How the Mandalorian came to be is not too important to me other than that it's happening, but maybe how the process works and if it's not Iger wagging a finger of give me this, give me that, and they actually have ideas, that's encouraging to me as a Star Wars fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That Lucasfilm's like, cool, a new platform to play with.
Yeah.
And it certainly seems that way with the way they're developing things with Cassian Andor clearly coming from pitches.
Yeah.
Right.
And Alan Horn even acknowledged that. He's like, people are now wearing an extra hat, so to speak, where it's like Pixar is asking, okay, what can we add to the Disney Plus streaming service? So everyone's kind of like, ooh, we get to add more content. Here's an idea. Hey, I have an idea. that was fascinating. That's a wrap on Star Wars Episode 9. Title to be D. J.J. Abrams, who rarely tweets anything, shared on Twitter a touching photo of Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, and Oscar Isaac all hugging each other on set with the caption, quote, it feels impossible, but today wrap photography on Episode 9. There is no adequate way to thank this truly magical crew and cast. I am forever indebted to you all, end quote. That photo really hit home for me that this might be the last time that we see these three on screen together. Mm-hmm. How did this photo make you guys feel when you saw it?
Warm fuzzies, but also just that, wow, time's passed and we're back. This is the kind of the big three. I think Kylo's, oddly enough, in there as a big three and a half. I guess we could, can we say the top four? I don't know.
Yeah.
And just the joy and this long process that began really in 2012, even before. I'm sure with some designs, but a good marker of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Warm fuzzies.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about it a little bit last week, kind of digging into some of the, like, ooh, the hints, or if there are no hints. But just emotionally, I feel like, I don't know. To me, it's a very bittersweet goodbye for now, because I don't care how many articles, interviews we will read in the next 2 or 3 years. We all know from, you know, history, they could all reunite
Yeah.
10 years from now, one of the most popular Star Wars franchises ever could be the Finn Solo series that comes out 20 years from now of old Finn. Like, we just don't know. Time is always moving forward. So I just really choose to look at it as like, this is a really amazing and beautiful closing of this chapter of those characters' lives, those actors' lives, and our journey with them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point because all those actors are relatively young. And so 10 years from now, they're still going to be in their 30s. I think Oscar Isaac might be, you know, 40s. But why not? They could star in their own trilogy or whatnot. That is a great point.
Yeah, someday when we are selling toilets based on their streaming services, you might want to buy the Poe Dameron exclusive.
Oh, my gosh.
That rumor that Finn series, right?
Yeah.
It'll happen sooner or later.
Oh, yeah. So there's already rumors. I mean, I think that we're going to hear a lot of not negativity, but a lot of like, I'm done from them because I think they're going to be peppered with these questions. But, you know, always in motion is the future.
It is.
Yeah, exactly.
Just ask Harrison Ford.
Right. Well, our friend Ash Crossan spoke with J.J. Abrams on the red carpet recently, and while he didn't divulge too much, she got some good tidbits out of him. He talked about working with Billy Dee Williams, and he said that he has an unbelievable respect for him and that Billy Dee had this aura around him on set. Ash also asked if the reception of The Last Jedi affected how he approached directing Episode 9, and he said, quote, no, because every movie is its own movie, end quote. They brought all the... that was not the end of the quote. Well, yeah, whatever. They brought all the passion and hard work that they would have no matter what the reception was from the previous film. And while Ash couldn't get the title out of JJ, she did ask him to give us one word of how we are going to feel after seeing Episode 9. He said, quote, you have to determine that yourself. I really can't wait for you to see it. There are a lot of words that we hope you will feel. Obviously, the biggest and most important one, I think, is satisfied, end quote. There's a lot. I thought he actually shared a lot, considering he didn't say much, but kudos to Ash for asking those tough questions.
Yeah, it's a really fun interview to watch. It's not an interview. It's a battle.
It's a battle, yeah. And he's enjoying it, too. You know, he's like,
he knows what he knows. He knows what's happening.
But my favorite thing was she asked about the reaction to the last one, and all of a sudden, then he couldn't hear her.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like, huh? What that?
Yeah.
Don't know what you're talking about. But as you pointed out, Joseph, he doesn't follow anyone on social media.
No, he did. He has zero. Is he following zero people on Twitter, which is, I think, kind of wise in some ways.
Yeah.
But I thought satisfied was a great word. I think the way that J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy talked about they wanted to delight with Force Awakens. Satisfied, I feel like, is not... I feel like from J.J. Abrams' perspective, that's not about, like, make sure no fans are mad.
Mm. Right.
But just, like you had a full meal. It's like kind of satisfied, which makes me really excited.
Right.
I like that a lot. That's good. Yeah, we get some Star Wars broccoli on there, as well as some Star Wars mashed potatoes. We can get all the good stuff and the healthy stuff and the fun stuff, too.
Yeah.
So satisfied. That's what I'm hoping for. I'm pulling for this movie.
Yeah, me too.
Pulling for this movie.
Yeah.
I think we all are.
Well, that's the news this week.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And there'll be more.
Yeah, and a lot of panel announcements. They've been stretched them out.
I know.
Figure it out. And this week, a gonk droid. So thank you, Jennifer, for the news. We're going to dive into our main topic shortly, which is the Oscars of Star Wars. We're post-Oscar week here around town, which means we're still talking about all the awards and the glory. We're going to do that here in Star Wars. But first, we want to recommend an audiobook we think you should try on us. Joseph, what do we got?
I am recommending Most Wanted by Ray Carson because it is a great solo tie-in novel, and I like Solo. We all like Solo, and this novel makes it even better. So go give it a listen.
Absolutely. I get, download your free audiobook today. Go to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. Try out Most Wanted by Ray Carson. What I was going to say before I finished the ad read there was this weekend someone said something to me about Solo that made me grumpy immediately. And I just got almost too mean. Not to that. I just was like, I don't know how to have this conversation.
Yeah.
His name, how he got his name, is perfectly fine. All right, move on. We're all in a fun Star Wars space. But hey, you know what's fun? Awards and winning awards and getting nominated for awards and, you know, sometimes just being there and on the red carpet, it's fun. But we're going to do this for Star Wars. It's Oscar week, like I said, and we decided it'd be fun to hand out some of our own Star Wars Oscars. We have come up with 7 categories of Star Wars related things, characters, supporting character, best song, best directed sequence, best comedy drama moment, best costume, and an own surprise category that we're going to lay down here. And we're going to dive on in, discuss our topics. And what's interesting is we don't know. We're surprising each other. So we're going to crack open that envelope on stage and be surprised just like you. So, dun, 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 dun. I don't have any Oscar theme music.
Was that the Johnny Carson Night Show theme?
I think
theme?
It was.
That seems about right.
It was.
That's about right.
Yeah.
It was. Good old Doc playing that one there.
Wow.
So we're going to dive on in and, you know, it's weird. We could also start at the point of Star Wars and the Oscars. Now, Solo was nominated for visual effects.
Yep.
Didn't win. I don't think I was expecting to win, though. It's fantastic. Star Wars and Oscars, it's always been an interesting relationship, right, Joseph?
Yeah. It did well that very first year.
Yeah.
And then it's been rocky ever since, right? Lots of, I believe, like effects awards over the years.
Sure.
And some music ones for John Williams, right?
Yeah.
But never any sort of deep love.
Which, it's not surprising, Jennifer. You watch the Oscars, you get all excited for them. You said you watched them last night.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like the Star Warses of the world.
They don't like, I don't want to say popular films, because that's not true, but it is more of an action adventure film, and traditionally the Academy does not like that. Although now the Academy is being diversified, so that's great. Get some young blood in there as well, because the Academy is traditionally older crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they don't find Star Wars to be that. In fact, I read some little snippet from an Academy voter, mm-hmm. anonymous Academy voter, who kind of slammed Solo.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was like, yep, not surprised.
Not surprised. Well, I go to, you know, Return of the King winning was not consolation, but it was kind of like, all right, Peter, you did this for three films. It's interesting to read that story and the campaign for the Oscars. So, hey, I don't know. Black Panther brought more than just a superhero movie. It brought something bigger than that. And that's the first one where you look up and go, all right, something from the genres are seeping through.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. I think, not surprisingly, Star Wars is worthy of many Oscars.
Yes.
Important ideas in Star Wars and told through great script writing, I think.
Absolutely. So I think we're going to dive in with our awards here. We'll go down one to seven. I think we'll do that there. The first envelope here is for best lead character performance in Star Wars. Now we're talking about the character and the actor, diving on into it there in story and out of story there. So it's always interesting to determine what is the lead. I think sometimes the Academy suffers with that too. But I think we all know what we mean in Star Wars when they were in the lead position in a movie, the big three, the big four, all that kind of stuff.
Sebulba.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So, Jennifer, I would like to give you the honors of opening the first envelope.
Okay. I mean, this one, I'm sure we're all going to have the same answer, perhaps. But for me, it is Mark Hamill. Because it really is his performance spanning from A New Hope to The Last Jedi. Seeing that evolution of the character and Mark Hamill as the actor, people do not give him enough credit for his performance in the original trilogy. I mean, he made Yoda, this green puppet, seem real from his acting performance. And then to see him become this disillusioned Jedi in The Last Jedi was just fantastic. And I do feel like he should have been nominated for an Oscar for that performance.
For Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just the hand-slapping scene alone.
Yeah, he infused comedy, and there was such depth, and I could really feel the history of this character, and also the actor himself who gave this character life.
I like that idea, that you could see it in his eyes. You could see the history of both him and Mark Hamill's relationship with Star Wars over the years. Yeah, that's a great choice. A career retrospective award.
Yeah, right.
Luke Skywalker. Joseph, your envelope, please.
My envelope is ripped open to reveal everything Jennifer just said.
Oh, yes.
No, absolutely. Mark Hamill was without pause, without doubt.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like his performance in the original trilogy is amazing from the whiny Tashi Station line onward. I feel like that line reading makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you said about Empire, about making all of that real, playing some of those harder, larger genre moments like that scream of no, and it's totally, it feels real. Yes. And not too much to me at all. You try getting your hand cut off by, you know, the person you hate most in the world and then have him real quick say, I'm your father. How would you react? Would you be a quiet little elegant? No, I don't think so. But there's so many moments in Return of the Jedi in particular that I go to play the, I made this big mistake in Empire. I ran off. I finally get it. Everything Obi-Wan and Yoda have been telling me about.
Mm-hmm.
This is a serious, somber thing to be a Jedi. It's not adventure. And to suddenly become this very serious-minded young man who understands the responsibility on his shoulders, but still be fun-loving and still care about his friends and still be in the moment, so many of those things, and just the moment when he does cut off Vader's hand and sees the electronics and looks at his own hand, everything he plays in those beats and makes all those decisions, it's all just an actor or a writer wrote on a page.
Yeah.
Make all of these decisions in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And he does flawlessly. You know exactly what Luke is thinking at all times, and it is just amazing. And that's not even getting into Last Jedi. I will end my Mark Hamill speech for time, but I 100% agree with everything you said and think he absolutely should have been nominated for an Oscar. And like, not even in a joking way, that is a phenomenal performance about the kind of things that the Academy usually cares about, which is somebody reflecting on hard truths of life and coping with them and trying to come to terms with them while also deftly handling comedy. You know, yeah. Mark Hamill all the way.
Mark Hamill all the way. That's a great choice. You guys are good. I came close in some of the newer ones. I think those the stories individual. I was looking at Kylo Ren, Last Jedi, Rey, Force Awakens, but those stories are still being told. And I think Adam Driver. I mean, he's now Oscar nominated himself. Reason. So, but I will go. I'll go to the big three, and I'm going to look at Harrison Ford in The Empire Strikes Back as kind of a template. We talked a lot about tone, jokingly saying, is Han Solo the epitome of Star Wars tone? There's some truth to that. Some everyone as a piece of the Star Wars tone. But I love him in Empire. I love what he brought and how he expanded the hotshot smuggler, the good scoundrel, the good heart, and entered. The love story was convincing. Obviously, Carrie Fisher is there dancing with him equally. But I still look at that performance as what a lot of Star Wars performances are measured against. Mm-hmm. You go back to Empire being everyone's, I say everyone with quotes, but everyone's favorite movie. I think he might be the through line through that entire movie. Then I'll look at Force Awakens when he comes back. Because I don't necessarily think Harrison was too interested in Return of the Jedi, though that's, you know, as my youth, I didn't care. But Force Awakens ties it into that, where he comes back and again, shows up to play, brings some depth to the character, the looks to Rey,
yeah,
the comedy, that's not how the first Force works. The Rathdar sequence, which I don't like the Rathdars themselves, but there's some great Han stuff in that.
Amazing stuff.
And then him coming back to full circle at the moment of it's true, all of it's true, that whole sequence is Harrison coming to finish his character in a great way. So I'll hand the award to Harrison Ford for Mosquito Coast. second category we're going with is the best supporting character.
Do you want to do in the characters?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you see those as two different things? I just want to know the Academy rules the Academy for this.
I saw that as a mix of one, but we can, yes, I'm prepared to do that too. Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
I was just going to say, I think the best actor in the universe is Sheev Palpatine within the reality. He did the best acting job.
Oh, I like
I
that.
See. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's good. Yeah, of course.
Well, I mean, he kind of wins hand down.
Yeah, I mean, sorry.
It's still might be Kylo too, though.
Because
I don't know what he's playing with.
Oh.
You know? Oh. And I believe every word he's saying to Rey. I'm not one of those, we'll see how the story plays out. I'm not one of those, he was lying to Rey completely, 100% type of people. I could get that idea. But there's a lot going on in him, too, where he played Snoke. Snoke's in his mind.
Yeah.
And he played Snoke. So I like that.
Yeah, that is a good acting moment.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jennifer?
I agree.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Sheev?
Can you top that?
Yeah. Sheev, I mean, Sheev going all the way back. I mean, Ian McDiarmid, I mean, this great stage actor bringing in that big bombast.
Yes. Surprise, to be subtle. Sure. No, it's not.
We'll be watching your career for a long time. So number two category is best supporting character performance in Star Wars. Now, this is where it's wide open. Because what is a supporting character? To what level?
Tough.
Yeah, this is just brutal. This is cruel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know why we're doing this
to ourselves. Joseph, do you want to go first? We'll go around the room like
man, that's really hard.
Oh, I can
you go first. I can see if you take one of mine and then make me feel less bad.
All right, my best supporting character performance in Star Wars goes to Shmi Skywalker, Prunilla August, and The Phantom Menace.
Oh.
I'm thinking,
that's a good one.
You know when someone wins an Academy Award and then everyone goes, but they were like on scene for 2 minutes, on screen for 2 minutes, and it's like some monologue that went. Her handing off Anakin to Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and just his life, I still think is one of the more touching scenes in Star Wars and connects a lot to the heart of Anakin. And, you kind of go back a little bit to how you're raised. And I still look at her raising him as best she could under their circumstances. And this is an accomplished actor, Prunella August, who gets a little tiny role. And then we joke. But the heat between her and Qui-Gon, like someone who, like, she's got someone's attention and like she feels a connection to this guy and trusts him in this way. I love that. And I even like the he will help you. He was meant to help you. That whole line from the trailer is one that kind of gave me chills as a youngster watching the movie 20 years ago. So I'm handing it to Shmi.
All right.
Shmi Skywalker.
That's very good.
I don't know if I took anyone's award.
No. But she's a great choice that I totally overlooked. I don't know. I was so lost with this, mm-hmm. and I had so many
places to go.
Yeah. I was like, do I go like Peter Mayhew? Do I go? Mm. I mean, could Leia be considered a supporting character? Carrie Fisher. So I went totally Dame okay. Judi Dench. In Shakespeare in Love,
yeah,
where it's just really one scene right. that to me wow. made it everything. And it's a character that I did not particularly care for. Mm. And that is Snoke in The Last Jedi.
Interesting.
Andy yeah. Serkis's performance. That to me, that performance sold me on that villain. And because I did not like Snoke, I thought he was kind of a hokey villain in The Force Awakens.
I agree.
Yeah, you know, but he gave this as Joseph, as you always say, this pulpy performance, very reminiscent for me of Ian McDermott's performance, and he made it work. And,
yeah.
I relished every line that he uttered. It was a joy to watch, and I hated him, and I yeah. loved him. And that, to me, is a mark of a successful actor slash villain.
Down to every level, Joseph, I think you and I have this favorite little beat of Snoke, which is Skywalker.
I assume.
It's such an asshole line delivery, and it makes him so real.
It does.
Yeah.
It really does. Because everything else is that, not everything else, but you know, oh, a fiery spit of hope. All that stuff's great. But there's that little line of Skywalker. So, like, oh man.
Yeah. You've met that that person who is a jerk and does have power and does know things and is using it on people and
love it. So that's a great, I think, and you can't go wrong with Andy Serkis.
Right.
I really don't think you can. Yeah. So the gold robe gets a gold statue.
There you go.
I love that. All right.
Gets cut in half immediately.
Okay, so this made it easier. Okay. Cuz I wasn't sure if we're going more for character or more for actor. So this makes it a little bit easier. For me, this is a little kind of old school and classic, but I think it all should have been done. I think Alec Guinness in A New Hope.
Oh,
I mean, the epitome of supporting character, and just as time goes on, the value of how seriously he took that role and how much life he infused it with. Obviously, I think maybe Lucas told him, Obi-Wan's being a little shifty. Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly what the truth is. But that whole scene where he explains, you know, all of Star Wars to Luke real quick about the Force and the Jedi, when Luke is like, what is the Force? And he has that little take to be like, oh my God, I remember you don't even know that. And that little smile that plays on his face of like, he's so young, he has no idea. I'm just going to dole it out this much. And then that the perfect little bits of manipulation of you must, you know, learn the ways of the Force. Mm-hmm. So I would give it to Alec Guinness.
Yes, great choice.
I think that's a great choice, and was nominated, right? So we're in real life, right? I remember. I don't have a list in front of me in 77.
Yeah, right.
But I also like what you're saying is in each bit of chunks dialogue he has, you can crawl into there and find a bunch of story,
right?
And in a weird way, it's not a big leap for me as a fan to crawl into that and like, all right, so he says I don't ever recall owning a droid, but even the look on his face sometimes I'm like, did Alec Guinness know that there'd be the Clone Wars series later?
Yeah. I mean, he knows he doesn't technically own a droid. Is he saying that to R2 as a warning?
Yeah,
like shh, don't you know? In his he's got such a defined attitude toward every other character. His entire attitude toward Han Solo is like, I know what you are too.
Yeah.
You're a brash young guy, so I'm going to take the piss out of you of, should I have?
Should I?
Yeah.
Love it. That's a great choice. Mm-hmm. Great choice. A close call for me. I was going to say perhaps Governor Tarkin in New Hope too, Peter.
Oh, Cushing. Yeah. Oh,
setting the tone for what the cold, icy Imperials are.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
You know? He was more the villain than Vader in a weird way in that one. All right, so that's our choices for best supporting character performance in Star Wars. Now we're going to get to, it's even more difficult now. We're going with best song in Star Wars. We will not have performances here. No one will be doing the songs. And we're going, I'm saying score because we could have easily, you know, you could nominate Lapdinek if you want.
Oh, shoot. Yeah.
Okay. No.
The score part.
No. If that's your choice, that's on the album.
Yeah.
Well, it's on the album. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Joseph, do you want to start or I'll start?
I'll start. Yeah. You know, I did not also pay attention to the direction of the Academy, and I went with...
The Academy's very confused a lot of times.
The score is hard because there are so many different things, and there's things that are... Is that technically a song, or is that a motif?
Right.
Or is that a musical theme that crops up in many songs on the soundtrack?
True.
So what I went with, and I can correct this if the Academy would choose, is the Cantina song.
Ah. Yeah, I think that's great.
Oh, wow.
Yes, that's what yours? I had. Yeah, but I want to hear why you chose that.
I chose it not only because it's a beautiful, iconic, fun piece of music, mm-hmm. but in that sort of revolutionary score for 1977 by bucking the musical trends of the time, that to have a song that is interior to the world still match the score and feel like it is of the musical score, but also defines so much about the world. And as I've gone on and on about before, how important that is that's kind of jazz inspired,
right?
That it gives it gave it in the real world in 1977 a sense of classicness, a sense of older generation, and a sense of the past. And that song accomplishes all those things. And then also just sounds exactly like what you would imagine would be in a space bar, but could have never imagined unless you were John Williams.
Right. Mm. Yeah, that's the other thing too is Williams, you know, comes up with it. Like, he gets it. That's why he's John freaking Williams.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I love it. Okay, that's a great choice. Was that your choice as well?
That was.
Not Lapty Neck? You can switch it to Lapty Neck.
I did not. But now I'm going to change mine, because now that I see the rules here, Academy. To score. And I just had this thought, and of course I went to Princess Leia's theme, but then I went to Rey's theme / the Jedi Steps.
That's a great choice.
That is such a magical piece of music that every time I hear it, it transports me to this other world. And that's what I love so much about the music of Star Wars, is that instantly, just a few measures, you just are like, I know that.
Yeah.
I know what that is. It gives me this visceral feeling. And that's why I love, music from the sequel trilogy is so good.
Yeah. I mean, Jedi Steps, I just can't praise that enough as some of his best work for the ending, what it means to both characters, including finding Luke up there waiting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the story. And I still, you know, I love that ending, and there's obstacles in the story to come that I love. But that I still look at that as the best ending in Star Wars in a weird way. We'll see what happens with 9.
Right.
And musically, and I think once again, like George Lucas would say, the secret sauce of Star Wars, it is Williams' work as she climbs up those steps. It fits so well. So that's your score piece. I love that.
Yeah.
You have a quick score op. It is tough because they show up everywhere.
Binary Sunset is hard to
very hard. Yeah, yeah.
And if we're going to give them out by trilogy, I think it gets maybe overused, but Duel of the Fates is a really powerful piece of music that really does make you feel like the galaxy just changed. This is the first time that Sith and Jedi really come into conflict, and now there is going to be more conflict than the galaxy has known for a long time, and fates are being decided in this deadly fight, and all of that, you feel it.
It is the Star Wars single. Had a video on MTV and VH1 for a reason. Could you imagine, you've already been blown away by John Williams for his whole career and what he did on your first three movies, and you're George Lucas, and John's like, hey, listen to this. What have you given me?
Wow. Yeah.
That's amazing. One of my backup choices, I think it's underrated way, I always go to Yoda's theme.
Oh, yeah.
It's so comforting to me, and it's so beautiful and really speaks to that side of Yoda that is the comfort guiding, but also tough, and it lines up to whether he appears in the prequels talking to younglings or shows back up to Luke. I love that scene in Last Jedi. I think a lot of people love, but when the music kicks in, like you said, Joseph, there's little motifs and themes come back, but when Yoda's theme pops back into that towards the end, as it fades away, that pulled the tears from my mind, from my soul. So I love that. Yoda's
good
thing.
Choice.
Yeah.
Good choices all around. All right. This one. This is going to be interesting here.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4 is best directed sequence in Star Wars. Now, sequence can be, you know, it could be a lot of things in a lot of people's minds.
Yeah.
It could be small. It could be larger. So we're leaving it open. There's no wrong answer here. There's no wrong answers at all today. But I don't feel... You know, Jennifer, all right?
Okay.
No matter what you chose, all right? Looking at you. So, best directed sequence in Star Wars. Who wants to start? Any volunteers? This is like class.
I'll start.
Yeah, go ahead.
Joseph's got it.
Yeah, I'll rip open that envelope, and it is revealed Han's carbon freezing scene in Empire Strikes Back.
Oh.
I didn't even remember
that. So good.
I love all of the modern films, but I think Empire Strikes Back still might be the most, the best directed.
Yeah.
Because it feels like every frame is cared for. We know from the history that Irvin Kershner went over on the shooting because he cared about everything. Mm-hmm. And I think he really worked with the actors. And I think one of the best places in Empire to see that is in that whole carbon freezing thing. Everything from the I love you, I know, to the little touches of Fett raising his blaster and Vader just putting it down. And then everything about that is, of course, like just design-wise looks so, so beautiful.
Right.
But then you get into just using the camera angles and the edits, everything for the emotion of what is happening to Han. Cocky, cocky, cocky until that quick look on his face of he truly doesn't know what this is. He hasn't been through this. He doesn't know what's about to happen to him. And that little bit of fear, the raising, the actual carbon freezing.
Yeah.
Carbon throws Han up, and then the fast cut to the slam in Leia's horror, and it really lets you, the audience, feel the horror of, it's such a weird idea of, like, your favorite hero from Star Wars, potentially, has been turned into an ice cube. It could have been Goofy, and he makes it terrifying and heartbreaking.
I really like that.
That's so good.
When I say I forgot that, meaning, like, I'm running through my choices, you know, and then I make some notes, I forgot it.
Yeah, there's so many, so many moments in Empire, like when Luke and Han leave each other on Hoth, and there's just that weightier look, and I just attribute that to Kershner just being like, give me that real emotion. How do you feel? And I feel like that's the scene that incorporates the most of that.
I love that choice. That's a great one.
Yeah. See, that's what I was looking for, because I really wanted, like, when I'm thinking of best, I was thinking best director, and Irving Kershner, for me, is the best one. I mean, sorry, George. You're a visionary. Well, hey,
he was George's teacher.
Best or more intense. So I think the sequence that I always think of in my mind, and I'm sure it's nostalgia, but one that I can, like, do the beats in my head, is the Jabba sail barge scene with where Luke finally gets his lightsaber and ignites it. And what I was thinking about was, as a, from a director's standpoint, you're dealing with creatures, and I'm sure that they shot this at different points of the day or different days. You have the creatures that you're dealing with on the sail barge. So you've got that action. Then you've got to deal with the real live actors. Plus you have Peter Mayhew in this big suit. So there's just a lot of moving parts. And then you actually do have, like, stunt people, and you don't want to give too much away. You got to build that suspense. So there was just a lot of things within that sequence that I thought was trickier to manage.
Yeah.
But
whether it was Hamill's choice, a directorial directive, but that little look that Luke gives his lightsaber.
Yes.
Everything about that is already great with the way it's set up of R2 getting him the lightsaber. But that look of, like, all right, now we're in business.
Yeah.
That little half smile is powerful. I think it's one of the best bits of direction in Return of the Jedi.
That's so interesting. So I'm feeling, I don't know which way to go. I have some options here, but,
all right.
But I love, I'll say this, I love the throne room scene in Return of the Jedi. And technically, Richard Mark Wan gets the credit, whether George was there on set pushing the pieces and buttons, we don't know. I was looking at Vader's reveal in Empire, the specific I am your father sequence, but I'm going to go this direction. My trophy goes to, my award goes to the throne room in The Last Jedi.
Nice.
Oh,
now, that includes
good.
The fight, and I know the fight, I've heard some people, they love it. Some people don't like the, just talking about the fight specifically. I love it. I love how it looks. I love how it's shot. But I'll break it down. We talked about the Snoke moments. The whole conversation with Snoke, everything he says, I love. I love every feel, every look, every emotion that he's getting across. I love the fiery pit of hope, fiery spit of hope still left in Rey, combined with her terror. But I think at the end, what it goes down to me is after the fight, her and Kylo at the moment, Ben, no, it's Kylo Ren's been born here. This is it. And him talking to her. And this is why I look at Adam Driver as the best in the sequel trilogy in terms of performance, just what he's getting out of that. what he's bringing to that. I love it. I stop what I'm doing every time. Sometimes I just put that scene on, and I think it's some of Daisy's best work. I think also her in the tree with Luke when she first, you know, mm-hmm. who are you, Ray from nowhere? I think that's a great little mm-hmm. quiet scene, but I will go big, epic, and then it breaks down to this truth being revealed possibly in both of them, and that's what I love. So I'm going to go that sequence.
I think that's really great. Lots of spoken things that make it more powerful of like when she just turns and realizes he's not going to do it. And
he's not. Yeah. He's not. I love that. So that's great. That is the awards. Final. No one out there can change them. Fifth one is a dual award. This is the best comedy and drama moment. All right. Now we're breaking it up into two here. Or is it we're going to have a Judd Apatow comedy drama moment?
That would be dramedy moment.
Dramedy.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. So we got two little moments here. This one was tough. Sometimes I don't want to outthink myself. But I did come up with some selections. Jen, do you have a comedy moment you want to share first?
Yeah, there's just too many to think of. There's too many nominees in this category. But the one that I think of, I've talked about before, is in The Force Awakens between Poe and Kylo Ren, the Who Talks First bit. And I think that what that does so effectively is I think back at the time we were watching The Force Awakens, first time getting back to see a Star Wars film. And it was very traditional Star Wars, you know, mystical and whatnot. And then this moment, you see Kylo Ren, this big baddie, and then this moment with Poe is so comedic and fun. And it, to me, that was like, okay, it's Star Wars.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is what Star Wars is about. And so that, to me, is an effective comedic moment. I love all the comedic moments in the sequel trilogy and even small moments in the original trilogy. I mean, there's just too many to name. I even love some of Jar Jar's moments too. My daughter has taught me how to appreciate the physical comedy and the slapstick side of it.
I love that.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
I love that. That's a great one. Comedy moment, Joseph?
Yeah. Also way long list, but I am going to give the statue to a newer film, to Solo, a Star Wars story, to Han attempts to threaten Anphis.
Oh, that's so good.
It is successful beat after successful beat while being pretty big comedy. Yeah. I got this. The step forward, the cockiness, the Falcon taking off immediately, and the slow walk back is just, it's perfect. It's a perfect little comedy sequence in a really tense, emotional Western science fiction spaghetti Western standoff, you know, that it's just, it's really, really successful to me.
When he gets back in line and does the whole like, hey, you know, do your thing.
You do yours. Yeah. And it's also just like, that's the Han we know, but not crystallized yet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. That's a great one. I was looking at Solo trying to find there's good options there. Cause it immediately you think of it as one of the more lighter Star Wars movies, but that's not necessarily true in terms of comedy. And in a weird way, Force Awakens might be for me, but that's a great one. That's a great one. I surprised myself with my choice. I went back to my childhood.
Ooh.
And I'm choosing C-3PO is some sort of god. I'm choosing the sequence when that's revealed.
Oh my gosh.
I love a lot of what C-3PO brings to the series in terms of comedy, other than, say, Attack of the Clones. A lot of it didn't work there for me, but I love it because here's this droid, especially now that we have now 8 movies and Clone Wars series and everywhere, where 3PO is kind of pushed around, bullied, made fun of.
Yeah.
We get it. He's an uptight and prissy droid. But so there's a lot of comedy from that. He's kind of clueless because he's so clued into protocol. I like all that. But in this moment, when he pops up and just it's Harrison doing the read of like, oh, well, okay. Like, they can't believe this. They've been, especially Harrison, Goldenrod, he's been disrespecting 3PO for a long time, shutting them up. And I just love the Ewoks praising, falling to their knees. That guy's wise. All of it. it's a lot. Some of the humor in Jedi doesn't stand up for me. Even the Solo tapping 3PO 3 times on the shoulder, not my favorite sequence now, but as a kid, I loved it more than I do now. But this one, I'm saying C-3PO being crowned a god is delicious, wonderful, justifying justice in the form of iron. You know what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
It's an early morning. Yes, I'm going with that.
That's excellent.
Surprise myself.
Yeah.
Surprise myself.
Excellent.
All right, drama. I'll start drama, I guess, and we'll go around there. I'm going to what I think is one of my favorite acting moments in the series, and there's not a lot of dialogue other than from a hologram. It is Jin in the hologram, as I like to say. Jin Erso sees her father. I think Felicity Jones in this moment just nailed everything, the history of the character and everything, you know. And I do think it plays perfectly just as a movie, but when you read all the other stuff too and you get the whole picture of the character of Jin, this moment he means even more. I always go to the idea that, hey, she thought her father was dead, but also thought her father ran away to join the Empire. Get it. She traitor. Was seven. Traitor. A lot of things going on there. So the reveal, not only is he alive, he's trying to do his best to take this all down, and now it falls to me. I actually do like Forrest Whitaker in that moment, hearing the in the distance, and there's something ominous when he turns, like,
yeah,
that's the end for him. So all of it plays, and I just like that little sequence. It is another one of those moments that if I've got Rogue One on in the background and I'm waiting just for the third act, because that's my favorite, I want some star fighting, I'll stop and watch that scene. I just love it so much. So I'll hand the award to Jin Erso.
That's great.
Jen, like a drama moment?
Yes, best drama moment. My nominees are the sequence in Empire Strikes Back where Darth Vader says, "I'm your father." The scene in Return of the Jedi between Luke and Leia when he says, "My sister has it," and he reveals that she's his sister. And the final nominee is a scene between Rey and Kylo Ren in The Last Jedi where they touch hands. And the winner is Luke and Leia in Return of the Jedi. My sister has it.
Wow.
To me, that moment, and again, going back to nostalgia, it's a moment that I remember being genuinely surprised and delighted by as a young child. And it's a great scene between Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher. I think it's one of Carrie Fisher's best performances. There's so much weight and so much exposition, if you will, of the story that's being delivered. And yet there is so much truth, and it's very grounded, even though it's this huge reveal. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's just so well done. And it was so exciting to hear these words, "The Force is strong in my family. My father has it, I have it, and my sister has it." And
the
I was like,
eye flick is perfectly timed when he, exactly when he looks at her.
Oh my gosh. And then her reaction of really taking that in, but realizing she has this look in her eye like, "Of course, this makes sense to me." It's so great by Carrie Fisher. That's my favorite drama moment.
Don't think you can go wrong there. That's a good one.
Well, that's great. I sometimes get hung up on really not understanding, and I've given myself Star Wars counseling, of having Leia talk so formally in parts of that scene. I've never understood why Marquand or Lucas made that choice. So I sometimes get distracted by that, but you're right that all of Carrie Fisher's like acting choices are amazing when she's processing. Bad news, Darth Vader's your father.
Oh, that
maybe
that
good
look.
News.
Yeah,
I'm your brother, and like coming to some amount of peace with that. But like that whole perspective the whole time of like her kind of sensing that Luke is somewhere else and needs something else and is going to do something dangerous and she doesn't want him to. Mm-hmm. Powerful.
Love that. Love that, sir.
All right.
Drama moment for you.
Drama moment. I'm not even going to list the nominees. I am just going to go right for giving the award to also Luke and Leia.
Oh.
But in The Last Jedi.
Oh.
I think their scene in The Last Jedi is one of just the most condensed drama moments, building even on that scene in Return of the Jedi that is the chosen storytelling of the Skywalker saga, where these huge epic stories only have 4, 5, maybe 10 in a really long scene line to convey a massive amount of information. And it's on the actors to just show them processing all of that on their faces for us, the audience, and the extra weight of the real life and how perfectly they played that, the deftness of having that touch of comedy and then moving on and just having them have every possible nuance of meaning from those words that they do is just, it's phenomenal.
I love that. I love both your choices, man. That's worth the price of the ticket in The Last Jedi for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a movie I love, that scene alone. Wow. So good. And Carrie Fisher's just being Carrie in that scene.
Yeah.
I changed my hair and all that kind of stuff.
And even the way he did so brotherly, the way Luke says, it's nice that way. And he has to shift gear and that they both know that he's there to apologize. But, you know, he does offer her a little a little bit more hope. Mm-hmm. No one's ever truly gone. And
I love it. Great awards there. Yeah. Good job, both of you, bringing your A game. We're going to go to our best costume in Star Wars. Wow, there's a lot of choices.
Yeah.
A lot of choices. My mind went several different directions, from the stark simpleness of something to the ornate beauty of another thing. I don't know which way to go. So, Jen, you're going to go first.
Okay. I do love John Mollo's costume design from A New Hope. The simplicity, also the lack of resources, made it good.
Right.
But I have to go with Queen Amidala's throne room gown in The Phantom Menace.
Yay.
Costume designer, Trisha Bigger. You know, I looked this up. She designed 68 different outfits for Padme over the course of those three films.
So amazing.
And every single one is iconic, and the detail in each one is impeccable. There's also, like, she draws from other cultures and historical elements, and just top-notch. And I think she only just recently won an Academy Award for something. I can't remember what. But it was a crime that she was not nominated for The Phantom Menace. Because that, to me, says so much about Amidala. And also, the gown was designed to make Padme look bigger than she was.
Yeah.
Give her that stature.
Yeah.
Just so much thought and detail and care went into that.
And the whole culture of Naboo. Not just the character, but just like everything. It's so much world building in a garment. Yeah.
Yep.
World building in a garment's a good pamphlet on how to design.
One last tidbit. Yeah. The costume took 8 weeks to make and cost a staggering $60,000 in materials and labor.
Wow. And how much of that was the bulbs at the bottom?
Exactly.
Right?
You know, damn. Right.
I tell you, it was one of my nominees because that shot, man, of her looking out the window from the trailer, it's just, it's one of those Star Wars shots that I love. Ooh, great. You want to go?
I want to talk first.
I talk first.
I talk first. I had that on my list of nominees.
Yeah.
That particular Padme dress. But when I sat and thought about it more, I'm giving the trophy to just Jedi robes.
That's good. That
that's great.
Pure simplicity that starts with Obi-Wan. I believe is the Jedi adopted the simple dress of the farmers, and we see that in Galen Erso looking a little farmer Jedi. And then it obviously gets a little fancier in the prequels, a little bit diversified. But just think of how many iconic moments are about a Jedi with a hood up.
Mm-hmm.
Taking it up, putting it down, and just that sense of how much the Jedi robe gives the Jedi a sense of formality, but also like a flowing energy.
Right.
That hood and those long sleeves of just sort of having a sense of being serene and contained.
Mm-hmm.
But that robe comes off. Yeah. The lightsaber comes out. Yeah. I think so much is communicated by the Jedi robe.
You're absolutely right. And the lore that's even just grown up around that. You know what I mean? That this is and going from Obi-Wan and Yoda wearing it to an Empire. I think that's sometimes forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We look at why are they all prequel Jedis are dressed like Tatooine people? Well, Yoda was too. It was already in place.
Yeah.
And I'm totally on board with the idea that the Jedi dressed humbly.
Yeah.
As farmers. Yeah. It's simplicity. Sometimes you got this $60,000 and you got some robes.
Yep.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
They both work. So, tough choices here for me. I have some nominees. It's Lando Calrissian in Empire Strikes Back.
Ooh, yeah, classic.
Set the tone of Capes in the Galaxy being cool, not just menacing. Enfys Nest and Solo.
Oh, yeah.
You take Star Wars cool, but then you put some story into the outfit. And when she talks about, you know, my mother wore the mask, you get the sense of there's something there to this and what things mean things on this outfit. And I like it. And her Marauders, her Cloud Riders have similar themes going on, but Enfys Nest to me is one of the best designs. But I'm going to go classic. You're going Jedi robes. I'm going the other side. I will go with the costume of Darth Vader.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Sometimes I want to outthink myself. And sometimes I think you got to go with the answer. If you had done this wrong, a couple clicks left or right, this could be super silly. Yeah. And you've seen some designs that look cool or weird and just don't work. You can only imagine what was the final product.
Yeah.
But I look at it and it all flows. Darth Maul flows to that. Even the Emperor, in a way, flows to that. Kylo Ren, which is another great... Kylo Ren of Force Awakens is...
Amazing design.
Yeah. Pitch perfect Star Wars evil, right? But it flows back. Everything goes back to Vader. And if that face, if every little angle and the eyes, the mouth, the little thing sticking out, the chain around his neck to hold him the cape, everything, yeah, it works, even his jumper. And if it didn't, we might have had a problem. You never know.
Absolutely.
We'll never know. So I got to give the Lifetime Achievement Award to Darth Vader.
That's great.
Final one here as we wrap up our Star Wars Oscars. This is our own category. We each just had our own little thing. So, that said, Jen, do you want to go first on your own Star Wars Oscar category?
Sure. So I'm giving this Academy Award to Best Creature Design in a Star Wars film. So we have a lot of films to choose from. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My the winner is The Return of the Jedi. And yeah, it goes to Phil Tippett, along with Joe Johnson, Nilo Rodas-Gimero, Dave Carson, Ken Ralston, and Chris Wallace. So what I find so great about The Return of the Jedi creature design is really the success of bringing these puppets to life and making them feel like a real world, specifically Jabba's throne room. You think about all these creatures that are so iconic now. Gamorrean Guard, Bib Fortuna, obviously Jabba, Salacious Crumb, the Skiff Guards, the Rancor. Like, there's just so much. And what I find really fascinating is that Phil Tippett has said that all the creatures started off not by, like, drawings, but actually as clay sculptures that were about 2 to 6 inches tall. There were no sketches or drawings because they were better sculptors than they were artists in that
amazing
way. And I think that you can really feel that. When I look at these characters on screen, I can feel what their skin might feel like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can
absolutely
imagine what Jabba's slime might feel like. And so that's why I think it's a success. And plus, in England, there was a crew of 30 mimes and puppeteers that brought all those characters to life.
Amazing.
What a crew.
I
I love this. This is my favorite. But there, I mean, Neil Scanlon and his team in the sequel trilogy, outstanding.
They've done an amazing job, but you're right. Like, a lot of, like, iconic, like, what we think of Star Wars, like Twi'leks.
Exactly. Admiral Akbar.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Yeah. Return of the Jedi creature design. Love that. Sir?
For my category, I went with giving an Academy Award to the best battle cry. There's a lot of great roars, a lot of great barks and whoops and whatnot, but I made this just to give an award to a Porg.
Yes.
This is for the Porg on board the Falcon.
Yes.
Should be absurd, but it is a fist-pumping action moment of, yes, the Falcon is here, and this Porg is unstoppable.
I love that moment, and I love that. That is a ringtone waiting to happen. That is a text tone waiting to happen.
Yeah, plus, if we actually gave these awards away, it's just fun to imagine the Porg trying to figure out how to move the statue.
To move this, and Chewie just kind of behind him, holding it.
Oh yeah, we make Chewie do it. Chewie be like...
And then the Porg does the acceptance speech, and it gets cut off, and Chewie just has to say thank you to a dead microphone.
Love
it.
That's great.
So this is probably because I was watching the Oscar broadcast while I was going over this stuff. I wanted to go with the best short film in Star Wars, and I got a little cheeky by saying The Rescue from Jabba's Palace. Sometimes joke, but I get it. I don't think it's 100% true, but I'm playing around with it now that the opening of Return of the Jedi, it's kind of its own movie.
It really is.
It's, you go off here, there's not really a first, second, and third act of that movie. There's a movie, and then there's like a second and third act of the Star Wars story going on there. So I'm going to give the best short film to the entire sequence of Jabba's Palace into the rescue over the Sarlacc pit. One of my favorites as a child for a reason. And a lot of what you're talking about, Jen, the creature design, the world that felt scary. I felt scared as a 7-year-old, the Rancor, Jabba, the Gamorrean guards, when that arm reaches out and grabs 3PO when they're walking down the hall, there's so much stuff around. Then the action, going into, that look you said, that's so perfect, Joseph, that look on Luke's face when he gets a lightsaber.
Yeah.
And R2. It is everything Star Wars was to me when I was too young to learn all the lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a lot of things at play in this sequence, but it's its own little film for me, The Rescue from Jabba's Palace.
That
it was like
is great.
The movie before the movie. Yeah, when you exactly. go to a Disney movie and like, here's a short film that's going to touch your heart. Mm. So that is our Oscars, our Star Wars Oscars. You know, it was. There's always a lot of choices. It's not quite a easy decision on any of these. And if you have an answer, let us know. Use the hashtag ForceCenter and maybe even hashtag Star Wars Oscars. We'll get something started. Let us know your choices or what you think about these ones. But we're going to go to our audience questions. We like to take questions from you every episode so we can have your voice heard and answer what you want us to answer. Joseph, we got a couple from Facebook today to start us out.
That is right. From Brian Rohrenbacher, we have... Would you rather have one Wookiee owe you a life debt or five Gungans owe you life debts? Jennifer, you have recently been converted by your daughter. Is yes. a fan of the comedy of Jar Jar Binks. Does that extend to wanting five Gungans to owe you a life debt?
It's a little iffy. I don't think I'd feel comfortable having the Gungans around, partially because I've talked so much smack on them. I wouldn't trust them.
Right.
I'm going to go with one Wookiee because it is they are the most dog-like creatures. I'm a huge dog lover, right. and I feel like I need that brute strength.
Right.
You know, and I also want that loyalty. I want that.
Yeah. yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, Ken?
Look, I'm going to go Wookiee too, but I don't... There's some value to the Gungans. Jar Jar had a life play, and I think he saved the day. Intentional or not, he yeah. did it.
Yeah.
And he was valuable. So I don't want to overlook the Gungans, but at the end of the day, you just look at Chewie, the dog thing, yeah, being a dog person for me myself. And it's not just the power, but it is the real, real deep, heartfelt loyalty that Chewie has.
Yeah.
And I'm sure all Wookiees have. Maybe not Black Chrysanthemum, but he's loyal to his bounties. So I'll go that.
Yeah, this is a clean sweep for the Wookiees. Everything you said, but also the Wookiees seem to be very insightful about the people they're with. So you'd also get good counsel from a Wookiee.
That's true.
If you bothered to learn their language. And then we've seen some good Gungans. Tarples is a Bombad warrior, all that, but... When you look at the evidence of the films, we saw Chewbacca have a life debt with Han Solo for decades. Yeah. We saw Jar Jar make a life debt with Qui-Gon, and then Qui-Gon dies immediately. It's possible that a Gungan life debt is technically actually a curse. They just have a different word for it.
Didn't think of that.
You're cursed to die, Qui-Gon. Yeah. Sorry. We say life debt. Is that not how you?
Oh my gosh.
Is that not how you say it?
Love that.
Anyway, moving on. Our next question on Facebook, Joshua Thorne says... Hey, also, I'm rewatching The Force Awakens, and it's implied that Laura Santeca has had a heavy history with the Force. Yet we really haven't had much canon material for him. Which character and or time period would you like to see him interact with? For me, I want an Obi-Wan and Laura Santeca episode of The Clone Wars. That would be very cool. I get the sense that the Clone Wars animated series is mostly wrapping up what Filoni already had in mind, although I would love to be surprised like this to see him pulling in stuff. Yeah. From sequel era Star Wars. I'm in the same boat. Laura Santeca listed places as being involved in the Church of Force, that entire encampment being Church of the Force. What are they doing on Jakku? All sorts of juicy stuff. Mm-hmm. I'll answer this one myself and then throw it out to you guys. I would love to see, this is probably not going to happen, but I would love to see an animated movie post Return of the Jedi with Luke and Laura Santeca in the Church of the Force. I think that if Disney Plus ever gets to that point of making like one-off animated movies, so Mark Hamill could do something like that, that would be an amazing way to flesh that out. I think it's the right time period because it's when Luke is really researching the Force.
Correct. It'd
really give us elbow room if that's what the story is about to explore what Church of the Force and Laura Santeca is.
Yeah, that's a big win for me, as is Joshua's idea of a very young Laura Santeca with Obi-Wan.
Yeah, very cool.
Right.
That would work. I'll throw out my choice here of Laura Santeca and Ahsoka during her search for Ezra.
Ooh, very nice.
That's good.
A very good one.
Does he have clues? Is that where she gets involved? Now, again, the time period, essentially, it might be around the time that he's going around the galaxy with Luke.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? Throw Ahsoka in there, that'd be amazing. Too. Luke meets them all.
Yeah, but her just kind of like, not necessarily like, I don't need guidance in the Force, but you know your way around the galaxy. You've been an adventurer, kind of explorer guy.
Yeah.
I lost my friend.
Yeah. Jennifer?
You know, I feel like I missed something in school. Like, you know, when you've been sick for a while. And I feel like, why do I not know more about Laura Santeca? Is he mentioned more in books, would you say? The current crop of books?
Yes, but there's not even that a lot, which is part of what Josh was saying here.
Okay. Well,
I mean, I always joke, a lot of it comes from the Force Awakens visual dictionary.
Yeah. That's where I think I need to go brush up.
Yeah, it's honestly like one of the original ideas for Databank Brawl was there's weird stuff in the databank, which is probably because it was in the visual dictionary. But our second episode is Laura Santeca because part of it was Church of the Force.
Right.
It was listed in there like, what?
Right. What is Church
Give of me more.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. So if I'm going to go, I mean, with what little knowledge I have, and I find the Church of the Force very fascinating, well, why not have him meet up with Yoda at some point?
That's great too.
Why not? Just,
yeah.
That's all I got.
What if he runs into him on Dagobah? Like he's just passing through.
Oh.
And he sits down and Yoda's kind of like, brought you to me, the Force has. And they have a bowl of soup.
Yeah.
Just talk.
There you go.
The soup of Laura Santeca.
Great question, Joshua. Now we'll go to Patreon. A couple questions we're taking for Patreon here. I'll pass the ball around here and start with Evan Osborne Lomax. Who I believe was a Jedi himself with that wonderful name. War versus lore question. Will the First Order as an organization be totally destroyed in Episode 9, or will they continue to exist to be a threat in 10 or sometime down the road? I personally would feel a little disappointed in the powerful new antagonists of the sequel trilogy if they were defeated just a year after the events of The Last Jedi, where they were just beginning their conquest of the galaxy. Interesting thought. I like what he's saying here. I get it. Jen, do you have any thoughts on the First Order?
Yeah, I feel like it's already kind of crumbling and I feel or weakening, I should say. And I feel like what's going to happen is it's going to splinter, you know, Kylo Ren is going to go off and want to do his thing and Hux is going to want to do his thing. So we might see it just a more weakened form of the First Order, but I agree that would be kind of disappointing to suddenly then have it be wiped out, after 9. It would be nice to have it kind of linger, like, you know, the flames are not totally out on the fire. Still a little a little bit of kindling still going on.
Give us some post 9 books to deal with.
Exactly.
Good thought there, Joseph. Do you want the First Order smashed out of existence?
In 9, yes. I do want it smashed out of existence, but with a couple caveats. You know, I think you go back to the prequels and there was a feeling in the movies that like, what? The Clone Wars were barely there.
Right.
I think that the Episode 9 is going to jump, if not a year, at more closer to 2 or 3 years. Mm. And I think the Star Wars Resistance show is already evidence that we're going to get a lot of storytelling in this sandbox. So I won't be upset to see the First Order defeated because in terms of the movies, it'll feel quick, but not in the grand total of Star Wars storytelling is my prediction. And then also I think it's really important how they handle the how the First Order ends, because the sequel trilogy has been about, well, you can defeat a specific institution, but that ideology is not going to die. And in fact, it is going to come back and you always have to be ready for it. You can't just, you know, ignore it like the New Republic did. So I think the storytelling would be maybe that the First Order dies, but that our characters are more aware that the ideology never will. So I'm not invested in that specific institution coming back.
Yeah.
Because the perspective will return and it will need to be fought. And Star Wars will continue.
Star Wars will continue. Yeah, that's a great way to look at it there. I think the First Order is an interesting thing because they wanted to bring back something familiar just as fans. Like, hey, Stormtroopers, TIE Fighters. And then I think Disney's done, Lucasfilm, I should say, has done a great job of infusing what you just described, Joseph, as, hey, they're kind of the continuation. They're bad at it, but they're still the continuation and even more just unfiltered.
Yeah,
we're doing this. So some of the stuff on Resistance, Tam going, no, the First Order's here. I feel safe. Like, love what they're playing with. So, and then because 8 starts right after, Evan's right. We don't get to spend a lot of time with them, but I also think that might be kind of the point that they are not supposed to be around, but we're going to get a lot more of them. But again, what you're saying is good. So I'm okay with them being destroyed because I still think this might come down to Kylo and Rey.
Yes.
And he's not necessarily the big baddie, but it's more about him.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Where it's like, He wasn't even, I don't even think he cares about the First Order.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, and one other thought to throw out there to see how much they play with this in episode 9, have they really gone out of their way to show us that these are brainwashed children for the most part, held together by a corps of officers who are kind of older school and truly, truly believe this. But will the episode 9 victory be that Finn somehow gets through to people and breaks the programming and all of these humans live?
Yeah.
But the institution of the First Order falls apart.
I love the idea of a Star Wars uprising.
Yeah.
A Star Wars, Stormtrooper uprising.
Yeah.
And a Star Wars uprising. I love that idea.
Yeah.
Because you're right. They really, it's really more than anything else. With the Empire, you get the sense of a lot of them did join up. Some just for a job, but some.
Some are true believers.
Let's go smash the galaxy. These kids were not.
Yeah.
Most of them.
There's plucked up and brainwashed.
Brainwashed. Yeah. Interesting idea there. Great thought, Evan. Final one here from Thomas Streeton. Says, hey guys, how much has been said about the various influences in all three of the Star Wars trilogies, from the Kurosawa films to French comics to classic monster or World War II movies. I was wondering whether you had seen these, perhaps because of the Star Wars connection, whether you liked learning about the influences or feel that it lessens your appreciation of Star Wars. Thanks for all the great work. A little film buff history question here.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys. I'm a mixed bag. Where I'm very familiar with World War II stuff. Very aware, but not familiar with the Kurosawa stuff. Never read French comics.
Yeah, it's a specific French comic that people pass around as it's got a couple similarities, and people accuse Lucas of putting a French comic book on screen, which I don't think is true.
Yeah,
I think to answer Thomas's bigger question, I think it increases appreciation of Star Wars and kind of puts it in a historical context, and also particularly lets you see where Lucas was coming from in creating all of this, which goes, you know, to our previous episode about tone of where do all these ideas come from. Yeah, right. And up to today when Rian Johnson is having Lucasfilm sit down with a list of films. For myself, I've seen a lot of this stuff. I've seen a lot of classic monsters, a lot of noir films and World War II films from the 30s and 40s and 50s, and lots of adventure serials. I've watched the Flash Gordon serial that Lucas loved as a kid. And I've seen the Kurosawa movies as a teen, so I really got to rewatch those.
Right.
It's high up on my list of a fun evening at home.
Right.
Rewatching those films.
Specifically what? Hidden Fortress is the one most people...
Seven Samurai, Fortress, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Specifically there. Jen?
Yeah.
Student of the Hill? Student of the film?
I've seen Flash Gordon. I have seen, you know, a lot of the Bogey Bacall, kind of those types of movies, that I think of with Han and Leia influenced them. But I have not seen any of the Kurosawa films. I've seen a couple of the World War II movies. This is one where I'm like, someday I will go to my own film school and study all of this, because I think that studying films is just, it's just great. Studying film history and seeing what people borrow from the past to create something new. That's what being an artist is. It's not about like rehashing, but it's being inspired and taking something, and it's a kernel, and sometimes it may be totally subconscious, and then it blossoms into something totally great. I think of Joseph Campbell and the modern myth and how much of an influence that had on George Lucas. So, I love that. I think it's a great, it increases my appreciation of Star Wars.
Yeah. I finally watched American Graffiti just last year. And that, I mean, that's obviously the same filmmaker, but that was really amazing to see in such a different film what things still felt like burgeoning ideas towards Star Wars. Like, if people haven't seen American Graffiti, a part of it is that all the kids are listening to the same radio station. It's just this disembodied voice of Wolfman Jack, but it's just a presence everywhere, connecting everything. And about halfway through the film, I was like, Wolfman Jack is the Force in American Graffiti. But it's an incredibly different thing, but it's the same emotional, tonal idea.
Yeah, it's great. And yeah, as far as like affecting or lessening my appreciation in any way, no, but I understand like... When you're younger, like I'm talking 10 or 11, you start like, so I started watching it 7 and 8, right? Hey, Star Wars. And then 10 or 11, 12, you start, pop culture starts seeping into your brain a little bit more. And you're like, oh, you know, the crawl and Flash Gordon stuff. I remember going, oh, because George didn't do it all. But I, as you grow up, I'm more on where you're coming from, Jen, of just like, yeah, it's a big, big buffet and these creators. things that come before, things that influence you, sometimes intentional or not. You know, I enjoy a Tarantino throwing an homage to one of his favorite films and his thing. And, you know, so I'm okay with it. I understand the idea of going, oh, this wasn't 100% George's brain, but I don't. Yeah, I fight back against the idea of like, well, all George did was, if it was just as simple as all George did was, we'd all have epic franchises everywhere. So that is that. But great thought, great question, Thomas, as well as Evan, Joshua, Brian, thank you so much for asking your questions. If you have a question for us, you can reach out on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Our Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Website is forcecenterpod.podomatic.net. We're also on Instagram and tpublic.com/user/forcecenters, where you can get your merch. I think it's still time to get some for Star Wars Celebration, and we'll share pictures of the merch. Podcasts available on Podomatic, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, and on YouTube. The Mace Windu In Memoriam went up. And then we also have the animated Databank Brawl still on there. If you haven't checked it out, I think probably most of you have, but give it another listen, give it a like, so we can help spread Brian Ward's wonderful work all through the internet there. And then Patreon recently, Joseph, we refreshed things and added some tasty morsels.
All sorts of tasty morsels. It's a buffet of new goals and new rewards. We've got some great things coming in from that. A couple of you have sent in your light side comments, which we're going to share on the main show. And it looks like we are close to having our first vote for the next movie we're going to do a commentary for. So look out for that. If you'd like to help us, go to patreon.com/forcecenter.
Absolutely. We have our own things we got going on. I'll be up in Seattle. Go to markellislive.com, doing some comedy up there and appearing at Emerald Comic Con on a panel there, the pop culture needle drop with our friend Darina, nice. Ariana, and Claudia Dolph, and others there. So follow me at Ken Napsack for more information on that. Jen.
That's awesome. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Jennifer Landa. I'm also just put up my first TikTok video where I shared my Aladdin reaction. I'm Jenny Landa, I think, on TikTok, and I hope to do more.
Jenny from the talk.
I like it.
I'm too old to know what a TikTok is. Yeah. I'm skipping TikTok.
TikTok,
whatever. I can't even say it.
Yeah.
There's my grumpy. That's my grumpy voice. Vaguely Southern for some reason. I don't know why, and I apologize. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. My website has all sorts of information on comedy albums, comedy shows, got a bunch more coming up. That's all on josephscrimshaw.com.
Absolutely. That is it. We hope you enjoyed our Star Wars Oscars. If you have an award to hand out, let us know. We'll see you next time here on Force Center.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.